That's right. I'm always
Ben's gonna edit it anyway.
Yeah, you better.
Yeah.
No, he's not gonna edit. He's just gonna post it unedited.
Teach me a lesson.
And me. I would be inadvertently involved in this lesson.
She would be devastated if you did that, Ben. Don't do it.
For me, Ben.
For me, Ben. For me, Ben. Please.
What's that? Oh, please, it's sir. That fucking movie that I was talking about last time I was here. The Girl Next Door, that movie with Emile Hirsch. Mm. I forget his character's name. But that when that guy came out, he's like, for me! Fuck her, for me!
Are you a good witch or a bad bitch? Bad
bitch, bad bitch. I've been a rebel all my life.
We will not remain hidden figures. We have names.
Oh, if it's naughty to ruse your lips, shake your shoulders, shake your hips, and let a lady confess I want to be best.
I didn't kid you, did I? Well, now you know.
No.
Let's talk about something that's not cannibalism.
By the way, welcome everybody to Good Witches, Bad Bitches.
Welcome.
This is a podcast that
yes,
we do that where we talk about ladies from all over time, all over space, so far Earth-based. We'll see what happens in the future.
So far, Earth-based.
Astronauts, sure, but they're, you know, she was born on Earth.
Yeah, fair.
Human
females, then and now.
Then and now.
And that's it.
I'm Deanna, this is Hannah.
Ha-ha.
Ha-ha. We talk about this stuff and we have a grand old time doing it.
We do indeed.
But speaking of like television and stuff that we're excited about for television, do you know what I'm really fucking stoked on?
No.
Is this week the announcement came out that FX has greenlit a pilot for Why the Last Man, which is a graphic novel series.
Ooh.
That is fucking great.
Okay, refresh my memory because I know a little bit about it, but I don't know
everything. And I haven't finished it, but I'd like to because I'm super obsessed with Saga and of course
Y as in the
letter
Y?
Like the chromosome.
Okay.
So
uh-huh.
Yep. And okay, so the premise of Why the Last Man is basically that some disease falls upon the earth, and every single creature with a Y chromosome drops dead. So, as we know, Y chromosome, biologically speaking, determines male, generally.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know that gender identity is a different thing, but that's the point of this graphic novel series, is that basically every male creature on earth drops dead.
Mm-hmm.
Except for this one dude, whose name is Yorick, because apparently Brian K. Vaughan is a Shakespeare nerd.
Oh.
His sister's named Hero, too, which is like, so they're both Shakespeare characters.
Oh my god. Oh, remind me. Okay, there is a Twitter, so somebody, speaking of Hero from Much Ado About Nothing,
uh-huh.
Somebody posted a Twitter thread from the perspective of Hero that I will link to.
That's
and I will
great.
Send you
I need
because
to know
it's
this.
So fucking funny. Okay, continue.
Right, so Yorick doesn't die,
mm-hmm.
and neither does his capuchin monkey named Ampersand. They are the last. They are the last male creatures, biologically male, born male creatures that are alive on Earth, and it's fascinating politically because, like, in the specific fictional world, it's like the president is male of the United States, the vice president is male, blah blah blah. It's basically like the 32nd person in line. Is the only she's the 32nd person in line for becoming president.
Oh, it's like Battlestar.
Yes.
In a way. Okay.
Yeah. And she becomes president. She's like, holy fucking shit. Because she, of course, was not anticipating now suddenly becoming president of the United States of America. And there's like this badass agent in it, like this like wonderful, who's like tasked with protecting him basically. And he kind of has to keep his identity a secret, of course, because
how?
By disguises, like covering his face, basically. Oh. But then, of course, you know, they're naturally, I would think, be in this situation, there'd be tons of trans men still left on the planet. Mm-hmm. So he could probably blend in that way. But I don't know if that ever comes up. I haven't gotten that far. But anyway, so it's a really good series. Mm-hmm. And like the political backlash, there's a scientist who she thinks it's her fault. But I haven't quite gotten there yet in the series. It's a really, really awesome graphic novel series. And Brian K. Vaughan is like an excellent storyteller.
And he does Saga,
He
right?
does Saga, which is the one that I have finished of his. He does it with Fiona Staples. And god damn it, I'm forgetting the artist who...
So what makes Why the Last Man, like, not, ooh, women suck,
Marjorie,
you know, fucking... No.
Yeah, here we go.
Feminist
Pia Guerra and Jose Marzan Jr. But why does it make it, what's amazing about it?
Like what? Yes, exactly. What's amazing about it?
He's just like a real, I don't know. He's an excellent storyteller to me. Like, his characters are all really wonderful. And, like, speaking to Saga, because that's just much more fresh in my mind. It's been a while since I've read Why the Last Man. I have it in my bag right now because I want to read more of it. But there's, like, a diversity even amongst the characters. It's always very different, like, views and colors and shapes and sizes. So it's just, like... That's part of what I love about, and it's very natural feeling when he incorporates these. It's not like, oh, this is the token blank character. This is the, you know, like, yeah. Oh, we have to write a fat lady in, or we have to write a lesbian in. All the relationships seem very well established. All the relationships seem very natural. His series are very like sexy without trying too hard. And that's part of what's so appealing about Saga, too. The world building that he does is phenomenal, and the characters he writes are so really well fleshed out and really relatable. And I'm excited for this, too, because he wrote Saga specifically to be impossible to translate into film or television.
Because, oh!
Yeah, Saga's about alien creatures. Saga is about, like, weird-ass language creatures... identities. It would just be one of the most expensive shows to make. Like, one of the main characters in it is he's got a TV for a head and gray skin.
Nice.
He's got a humanoid body, but he's a robot.
Okay.
But with a TV face.
Cool. My favorite.
So it'd be really, anyway. But Why the Last Man, they've been trying to turn it into a film or TV series for a very long time. It was supposed to be getting turned into a movie ages ago. I specifically pulled up this article that AV Club did that's called, here's a brief timeline of just how damn long we've been writing about this Why the Last Man adaptation. So basically, 2010, when it was being developed as a movie, former director DJ Caruso, about why he was leaving a film that was already being viewed as somewhat troubled property. The problem then is with so many attempts to cut sprawling comic epics like Why or Neil Gaiman's Sandman into a manageable cinematic form was length.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Something that FX's TV version, which is being helmed by Michael Green and Ada Mashaka Kroll, will hopefully be able to correct. So what's cool is that the film stuff, all that they've been doing before, was helmed by all men.
Yeah.
And now the director of the pilot that's been greenlit is a woman. And then one of the showrunners is a man, and the other one, though, the showrunner is a woman. So I think that's really cool because it's about a world of women, which ties in well to like all that we've been talking about on this show.
Yeah.
It's like trusting an all male team to tell a story about a world that's like, I get that the protagonist is the last man on Earth, but like,
like
when Joss Whedon tried to write a fucking Wonder Woman script and it was a nightmare and a half.
And I love Joss, but I love Joss for what he has done and probably not for what he will ever do ever again.
Yeah.
Because like...
Melina Matsoukas is directing the pilot. Matsoukas, who's the director, she's a well-known music video director who frequently works with Beyonce and who recently handled several episodes of Insecure.
Oh, yeah. Okay, cool.
So but they've been trying to turn it into
a thing
for like 8 years.
Yeah.
And so some people are not exactly holding their breath.
Right.
about it, but I'm super stoked because I think FX is a great network.
I'm really excited about this.
You should start reading it. You should at least read this one.
I should, especially because, so as an agent, I get a lot of queries for books that are like feminist utopias where men are, there's either one man left or there is a, or all of the men who are left are subjugated in some way. And I hate that. And I feel like this kind of maybe part of why I've waited to read that is because that's what I don't want to read. I don't want to read Why the Last Man, about the last guy in a female universe where men are subjugated and blah, 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 blah. So what I love about that is it's way less about, like, men, they were so great, and now, like, oh, you're gonna be so lost without them. It's more about, this is what men fucking took advantage of, and now the fact that that's
But now
happening.
We're in a world where all of these roles that had been 90% plus filled by men are suddenly empty. And what does it look like when women step up and that's what they have to do? 99% of the world's mechanics and electricians and construction workers are dead. 99%?
Oh, God.
They're not saying that women didn't know how to do it, but clearly in the world, the majority of people who do that kind of work are male.
Those jobs were dominated by men for whatever reason.
85% of all government representatives?
Oh, my God.
I have to tell you something else a little bit later about him.
Okay.
Yeah, see, it, like, opens with him, like, fucking...
tied up?
Trying to get out of a straitjacket. Magic purposes.
All right, so this idea is pretty awesome.
It is, and I hope it does really well because it's great, and... I need it.
Yeah, that's very exciting.
Yes.
I like it.
Yay!
Thank you.
Yeah.
About some ladies.
Let's talk about some ladies.
All right.
We have a lady to talk about.
Ladies. Okay.
Women loving women.
Oh.
Let's talk about it.
Let's talk about
Hannah,
women.
Who are we going to talk about this week?
Okay, so we're going to talk about somebody named Rosalind Franklin. Does that name ring a bell to you?
No, but I fucking love that name.
All right, we're going to get some science in our brains today.
Science!
So pay attention, because I'm going to throw out a lot of words that might...
You're saying I'm too dumb to get it?
I'm saying I'm too dumb to get it. So I hope someone else is too dumb to get it, because
I will
be alone. Okay.
We're very right-brained folk over here.
I'm going to start in with an intro. I've written out this intro for you.
Lay it on me.
So Rosalind Franklin was somebody who we didn't talk about until very recently, and I'm not entirely sure why that is. It was like somebody figured out her involvement in this and started bringing her achievements to light. So
she was a hidden figure.
She was kind of a hidden figure. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the discovery of the shape of DNA before the double helix. The double helix. So
boom!
60 years ago.
Science
reached a turning point. Francis Crick and James Watson, which are two names I'm going to mention a lot, published a paper detailing an amazing discovery, the structure of DNA. Soon after, they and another scientist, Maurice Wilkins, received a Nobel Prize for this discovery. "It has not escaped our notice," they wrote in a brief paper in the journal Nature, "that the double helix immediately suggests a copying mechanism for the genetic material." So, DNA's operation is determined by its shape. Each rung of the ladder is made up of a pair of two of the four letters of the DNA alphabet.
Yep.
A, T, C, and G. But A will only pair with T and C only with G. So if you were to split the ladder in two, breaking the paired rungs, then on each of those struts, you would have all of the information needed to replace the missing one.
Okay.
Hence, from one DNA molecule, you can make two identical molecules. This is happening, yes, this is happening right now inside of you as the cells that make up your body divide at a rate of around 3,000 letters a minute. Bacteria can do it 10 times faster.
Well, fuck you, bacteria.
Yeah.
Look at how great you are.
Seriously, motherfuckers.
They do take us down from time to time.
It's fine.
It's fine.
And the same process has been happening continuously in every cell that has ever existed on Earth. So DNA is a code, a means of storing biological data in the form of genes. The code was systematically cracked in the 1960s, revealing that life is breathtakingly conservative. So that's important because pretty much every DNA discovery we have made since then was based on the fact that we finally understood what the shape of DNA was, that it was a double helix,
right?
That it was this ladder shape that could be
spirally ladder.
Yeah, that could be taken apart and copied.
Mm-hmm.
So before that point, there were a bunch of people trying to figure out what the shape of DNA was. So that brings me to Rosalind Franklin. Rosalind Franklin was born July 25th, 1920, and grew up in a well-known Jewish family in pre-World War II London. She was known in the family for being very clever and outspoken. She was sent to really good schools and was known for her rigorous academics in physics and chemistry.
Dang, girl.
I know. In an interview for PBS, two of her friends recalled her from their school days. They said, "She was the best in science, best at maths, best in everything. She expected that if she undertook to do something, she would be in charge of it." By the age of 15, over objections from her father, who thought she would go into social work because, of course, that's what you do feminine jobs when you're a female. You take care of people. Franklin was like, fuck that, I'm going to be a scientist. And that's basically what she endeavored to do. She graduated in 1938. She took a job with the British Coal Utilization Research Association. And she was...
The British Coal Research Utilization Association?
I know. Can you believe how fast I said that?
You said that great.
Thank you. I appreciate that, considering I've had some wine.
So, okay. That was about figuring out the best ways to use coal.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which was not probably a good avenue to take, but we couldn't have known that at that time.
But something that came out of her involvement in that, and this was like, so when I, in all of my research of her, she made, the contribution I'm going to talk about today is to DNA.
Okay.
But she made contributions to a lot of different things that we don't talk about. So part of her involvement in this is that her work was used in development of the gas masks that helped keep British soldiers safer. Yeah, like she helped develop gas masks to keep our lungs clean.
Which is very important in London at this era.
It's huge. It's huge. And so that's something that she just like kind of did right out of school. She just kind of, you know, she needed something to do. So why not?
Great.
So, she earned her PhD in physical chemistry from Cambridge University in 1945. So, in 1947, she moved to Paris to take up a job at the Laboratoire Central. You gonna... Thank you! Yes! Working with Jacques Mering on perfecting the science of X-ray chromatography.
Mm-hmm.
So, by all accounts, she was really happy in Paris. She...
X-ray what?
X-ray chromatography. So basically taking photos using X-ray.
Got it.
So she loved Paris. She loved her colleagues. She was well-respected.
What year was
this?
This
was 1947.
Oh.
She was known to enjoy doing the meticulous mathematical equations necessary to interpret the data about atomic structure that was being revealed in the X-rays.
She was not
like,
afraid of tedious, intense mathematical work.
No, she was like, I need a fucking challenge. I'm going to put my brain to this.
Let me solve a problem for
you. Let me solve this problem. Yeah. And she did it. She was known for doing it. So in 1951, she reluctantly decided it was time to move back to London to fully advance her scientific career. She joined the lab at King's College in London.
Sure.
Having to skirt a leftover bomb crater to get into the building from the Blitz.
In the 50s?
In the 50s, in 1951. She had she had to skirt a fucking bomb crater to get into the building to go do her work. She found that she was expected to work with antiquated equipment.
Of course.
In the basement of the building, of course. Yes. She took charge of the lab with her customary efficiency, directing the graduate student who was there, Raymond Gosling, in making needed refinements to the X-ray equipment. So the two of them started doing shit. Like, she started...
Raymond and Rosalind.
Like, they started making over the lab and turning it into what she needed it to be to do her X-ray research.
To actually get efficient work done.
Yeah. So at the time, she knew that she was supposed to have a colleague, but he was on vacation. And his name was Maurice Wilkins. When he came back, he was surprised because he was expecting... They told him, hey, we're going to have a woman in the office. And he thought that meant he was getting an assistant.
Oh.
He just was like, oh, a woman's coming? Cool. I get an assistant now. And when it turned out that she was
what
an actual...
What a comedy of errors.
Dude.
That she was just as smart as him, if not smarter?
If not smarter. He was so pissed. He was not happy about that. So, they had a very tense relationship. Shock of shocks. Because he was like, I wish I had an assistant and not somebody who is as smart as me. And she was like...
They have a grad student working under them.
I know.
That's your fucking assistant.
I assume, and I don't know, I mean, all that I could find was that he was looking for an assistant. And honestly, this is the other thing that's been crazy about researching her, is a lot of publications that I found were defending his and the other men involved, their behavior.
Oh, God.
So I found a really good article in Live Science that talked about the sexism that she dealt with and this was one of the only instances I could find where they talked about the fact that the reason for their tension was that he expected a secretary. And she was like, hey, I'm a fucking scientist, you asshole. Like, I'm here to talk about X-rays and the atomic structure.
Which is insane, because having a partner that's your equal seems like it would be much more helpful.
You would think, but I guess if it's a woman, it doesn't matter.
Woman in the 50s.
It's very threatening, right?
Sure.
This is how the two of them continued to work. Like, seriously. That's how they continued their relationship.
God bless her for being able to get work done anyway.
She was just like, fuck you, I'm gonna do my own shit, I'm gonna do my own thing, you can't handle me, so I will continue my research on my own time.
Man, I wish I had a secretary.
Yeah, he was so fucking upset.
Ugh.
He used to, he started spending more and more time, I just burped, excuse me, he started spending more and more time at the nearby Cavendish Laboratory with his friend Francis Crick. Do we remember this name? Crick and his partner James Watson. Crick and Watson. They were working on a model-based approach to trying to discover the structure of the DNA molecule. I'm not entirely sure what that means. I think...
Were they just playing around with sculptures until they felt like they had the right one?
From what I could tell, because I am not a scientist, so it was really hard to parse some of this language, but yes, like, they continued to create models of, like, what they thought it would look like, how they thought it would function based on their own sciences.
Okay, sure.
So, yeah. So, around this time, Franklin and Gosling, the grad student, made a startling discovery. There were two forms of DNA shown in an X-ray image, a dry A form and a wetter B form, because each X-ray chromatograph had to be exposed for over 100 hours.
What?
To form an image.
Oh God, the patience.
Yeah. So... I'm just going to say that again just because that was a mouthful. Because each X-ray chromatograph had to be exposed for over 100 hours to form an image, and the drier A form seemed likelier to produce images in more detail, Franklin set aside the B form to study later. She noted that the B form images appeared to show a definite helical structure and that there were two clear strands visible in the image that she labeled photo 51 before she filed it away. So photo 51 is important.
That showed the helix.
Uh-huh, that showed the helical structure.
Mm-hmm.
So around this time, she attended a conference given at Cavendish, which is where her lab mate has been spending all of his fucking pissy time.
Mm-hmm.
She went to a conference.
Crank time.
What?
Crank time.
It was crank time. She went to a conference over there to observe an early DNA model being proposed by Watson and Crick. She was pretty critical of their work, feeling that they were... feeling that they were basing their model solely on conjecture, whereas her own work was based on solid evidence. And she was right. Like, they didn't have any...
Could this work?
Yeah. She had a background in chemistry that they didn't have. And so they proposed this model. And so there's an article that I will link to at the end of this that I'm not going to go into too much detail now. But basically, they had no understanding of chemistry. So they had no understanding of the reasons that the model they were proposing was inherently, like, impossible. And she, being a chemist, was like, you guys are fucking idiots. This is literally not possible. You can't do this. This isn't a thing. I can't even believe that they gave you a lecture on this, that they gave you time to talk about this to a group of people.
Because if you would have just run it past me...
Yes.
I could have told you that that's not how it is, and here's why.
Right. It's inherently
wrong. I don't know exactly what it looks like yet, but I know it's not that.
Yeah. And I know that just based on what I know of chemical compounds. So, So she was like, that's fucking stupid. And she told her colleague, Wilkins, that. And she went to this conference, and she was very critical of their work. She basically was like... You know, this is wrong for these reasons. So Watson and Crick's first foray into trying to crack the structure of DNA took place in 1952. It was a complete disaster. Their three-stranded inside-out model was hopelessly wrong, and she dismissed it at a glance because of her chemistry background. She was like, there's no way this is possible. So following complaints from the King's group that Watson and Crick were treading on their toes, Sir Lawrence Bragg, the head of the Cavendish Lab in Cambridge, told them, stop working on DNA. Stop trying. So Watson and Crick were told, fucking quit. Like,
you're not getting anywhere.
You're not getting
anywhere. You're wasting our money.
Yeah, you're wasting our time.
Yeah.
But at the beginning of 1953, a U.S. competitor became interested in the structure of DNA. So he set them back on the problem.
Oh.
And of course, like, by now, they're like, okay, well, our work, we don't know what we're talking about. this Rosalind Franklin person knows more than we do. So, they utilize that. Of course, the fact that Rosalind was like, hey, your dude bros don't know what the fuck they're talking about, made Wilkins even pissier at her. So, their relationship became way, way, way tense, like way more tense than usual. And she was so unhappy that people in the lab began to talk behind her back, and they called her the Dark Lady. Basically, they made her life so fucking hellish that in 1953, she decided...
And men say women are gossipy. And
I know! I know. They made her life hell. And so she, in 1953, she decided to move to a different college, Birkbeck College, to basically escape Wilkins and to escape all of the gossip at King's College. So, somehow, during the move, quote-unquote, somehow during the move,
right.
Wilkins came to be in possession of Franklin's notes and the file containing photo 51. So Wilkins removed the photo from her records without her knowledge or permission and took it to show his friends at Cavendish. My mouth fell open and my pulse began to race, wrote Watson in his famous book, The Double Helix, which he published and talked all sorts of shit about Rosalind Franklin in his book, by the way. It was the one bit of information that he and Crick needed to complete an accurate model of the structure of DNA. Photo 51 was proof that DNA's helical structure had two strands attached in the middle by the phosphate bases. So what Watson and Crick had needed at that point was far more than the idea of a helix. They needed precise observations from X-ray crystallography or chromatography, whatever, both of those things that she was working on. But of course, Franklin was gone. She had left because she was trying to escape all of their bullshit. So they went behind her back and got a report from someone else at Cambridge University that she had made, like, a while ago, basically detailing all of her research into this structure and into DNA. They went and they got this report from him, and that guy passed it on to them. So now they had the material that they needed to do their calculations, because they stole it from her.
Yeah.
So those numbers, which included the relative distances of the repetitive elements in the DNA molecule and the dimensions of what is called the monoclinic unit cell, which indicated what the molecule was in two matching parts running in opposite directions, were decisive. So that's a lot of shit that doesn't mean anything to me, necessarily, but it's a lot of information. It's critical
for them.
It's critical information about the cell, the DNA cell, and, like, what it does and how it functions, and none of it came from them. And that's not to say, because from what I understand, they were brilliant scientists, and they went on and they continued this work, and they did amazing
things. I mean, of course they were.
Of course they were. Like, they were just sucky people. Yeah, I mean, they just, like, this was a sucky thing, and nobody ever thought about it, nobody ever questioned it, because she was a woman who they were stealing from.
Yeah.
So, there's another article that I found. The Live Science one is very much pro-Rosalind.
Hmm.
But there was a Guardian article I found that was like, it wasn't their fault. It wasn't Watson and Crick's fault. Like, they weren't being sexist. They were just being, you know, competitive. Like, that's just what you do.
I mean, I'm sure that was an element to
it. I'm sure it was.
And because science is a very competitive field, and I know that it's like getting credit for work is, and so if you can find a way to kind of skip around that. But also the 1950s were a very sexist time.
Yeah.
And of course they would denigrate the quality of her work just by nature of her being a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And because they were jealous, probably.
Wilkins clearly had some fucking issues with her.
But so it's probably a little of column A, a little of column B. Mm-hmm. Like, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. So they didn't tell anyone at King's College what they were doing, that they had acquired the data dishonestly, and they did not ask her for permission to interpret her data.
And that's shit that wouldn't fly today.
No, not at all.
You couldn't steal someone's, even if it's a minor, minor piece. Uh-uh. That was the piece, the missing link.
The missing fucking link.
You could never, that would never be heard of today where you, no. That's uncredited work.
No. And a lot of the articles I found tried to write it off as if, like, the only contribution she made was taking this photograph, this photo 51.
But no, she had notes. I've already had this based off of what you told
me. Yes, she had a full report that they basically got from her. She didn't know about it, and nobody ever fucking asked her permission to use it. They had all of her data on this thing. So, ironically, the data provided by Franklin in that report was virtually identical to the data she had presented at a small seminar at King's College in 1951 when Jim Watson was in the audience. Had he bothered to pay attention and take any notes during her talk instead of idly musing about what she fucking looked like and her dress sense, he would have provided his partner, Frick, with the vital numerical evidence 15 months before the breakthrough finally came.
Oh, Jesus, that's frustrating.
How?
That's like elements of Ludmilla in there where it's like, yeah, you're a great soldier, but could you dress better? It's like, yeah, you're a decent scientist, but what are you wearing?
But why, yeah, like, I wish I could see your boobs through that shirt. Like, why don't you fucking listen?
Can we
listen?
Use some of those x-rays to look at your tits?
Oh, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. I like that.
X-ray vision tits. That's what they wanted to use that's their scientific wanted. Knowledge
mm-hmm.
for.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
Look at me putting words and thoughts into dead people's heads. I assume they're dead. Either that or they're real old.
Yeah, no, I think, I don't
know. If they were grown men in the 50s, they're that's, you know, 70 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they might be dead by now. I'm not actually sure. I maybe should look that up.
I'm sure they're dead.
So, I hope so. As it was,
I hope so.
Rosalind Franklin had already cracked the case wide open, and the only thing that was left for her to do when she decided to leave King's College was to prove her theory in tests and models. Since she never had a chance to do that because she left King's College, because she was being harassed by Wilkins and all of the other people there, part of leaving, she made the agreement to not study DNA anymore.
Boom.
That was, like, part of her agreement in leaving King's College. To get out of this toxic situation that was created for her by this fucking poor, emasculated scientist, bro.
Gross.
She wasn't allowed to study DNA anymore. So she left, and she was, like, on the verge of cracking the fucking case. And she had to go.
She had to put her work on the back burner.
Yes.
For her own
health
and
emotional
safety.
Health. Yeah. Yes. Exactly. So Watson and Crick crossed the finish line, and they hurried to publish their findings in the journal Nature.
Before she realized what they'd done. Uh-huh.
In the same issue of the journal, which was published, much shorter articles by Wilkins and Franklin came after the longer article by Watson and Crick, seeming to imply that their work merely served to confirm the important discovery made by Watson and Crick, rather than being integral to it. Mm. So, Franklin, meanwhile, had moved on to Birkbeck. Part of the arrangement was that she wouldn't study DNA, so she turned her talents to studying virus particles. Between 1953 and 1958, she made very important discoveries about the tobacco mosaic virus and polio. The work done by Franklin and the other scientists at Birkbeck during this time laid the foundation for modern virology.
Oh!
So that's one of those things that I didn't end up talking about during this thing, because I think it would go on way too long. But she basically, she went on to make these amazing discoveries about DNA, and despite the fact that her work was basically co-opted by these two dudes, she went on and was like, I'm going to make these other discoveries that
about
will
viruses.
Help people. Yeah, in other capacities. So, she still
that
did.
That then anti-vaxxers would take and.
Oh, God. Oh. Let's not talk about them.
Blech. Vaccinate your children. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Fuck you if you don't.
Fuck you. So I wrote here, basically Wilkins and his fragile male ego chased her out of King's College and DNA research, so she was like, all right, fuck you, I'm just gonna go lay the foundation for modern virology, peace out.
Good for her.
I feel like that's a good, yeah.
She's able to rise above, man.
Yeah. So
take the high road.
Sadly, and this is part of why I picked her, even though this is kind of morbid, Franklin died on April 16th, 1958, of ovarian cancer. My birthday is April 16th. So, oh, weird. So she died on April 16th, 1958, of ovarian cancer, possibly caused by her extensive exposure to radiation while doing her x-ray work.
Yeah.
Which is like, oh, God, it hurts a little bit.
That's why we wear those lead vests when we get x-rays of our teeth.
Yep. But they didn't know that back then.
And they're like, are you pregnant?
Because the Nobel Prize can only be shared among three living scientists, Franklin's work was barely mentioned when the Nobel Prize was awarded to Watson, Crick, and Wilkins in 1962. By the time The Double Helix by James Watson was written in 1968, Franklin was portrayed almost as a villain in his book. Watson described her as a belligerent, emotional woman unable to interpret her own data.
Blah, that
I know.
Makes me so mad.
It just like makes my whole body tense up in a way that
it's
is like.
It's enraging because it's so cliche.
I know. It's like, come on, you guys. Like,
I mean,
you couldn't do any of this without her because you didn't even have a basic understanding of chemistry. Like, come the fuck on. Yeah, I know. Just like go jack off in that closet over there and don't bother anyone.
Go Christerbate in the
God,
corner, please.
Christerbate. Oh my God. I love that. I'm going to do that later.
Don't do that.
Okay. It's only in the past decade that Franklin's contribution has been acknowledged and honored. Thank God. So today there are many new facilities, scholarships, and research grants, especially those for women being named in her honor. So, something good came out of it. We know about her now.
Say her name.
Say her fucking name. Even though a lot of the articles I found were like, oh, these guys, they were fine. Like, they did all of this mostly on their own. They just, like, took her photo or whatever. Like, No, it's not. That's not all they did. And also, she provided them the answers a full 2 years before they actually found them, and they were just too caught up in what she was wearing on stage to even pay attention, which is
idiot.
So fucking sad. So I'll end this with, there's a really great PBS interview with Lynn Osman Elkin, who is a professor of biological sciences at California State University, where she goes into the scientific specifics of what Rosalyn knew and was able to provide in that report that Watson and Crick used.
And why it was so important.
It's really fascinating. So I'm going to link to that in the show notes because it's worth a look, even if you don't know science, because I don't know anything about.
Not to that degree.
Anything about science. I know I used a lot of scientific words and references.
No, you explained it very well.
I tried, because I needed it to be explained to me very well. So, you know. That's Anna, good. Tell me what you're happy about. What you want to talk about.
So what I want to talk about this week that I'm happy and excited about, I started a new job, which led me to, or I started working on a new project, I should say. It's the same job.
Yes.
But it's something we should talk about on this show, which is the television show Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Oh, yes.
Because that show is really enjoyable and I think really unique because it is historical. Mm-hmm. It features a Jewish woman as the lead, which yes. And she's very prominently Jewish. Mm-hmm. Which I don't think is particularly common, especially in pieces from the 60s. And it's about what it means to be a female comedian and the struggles that they have to deal with, but in a really funny, warm, poignant way with a great cast, I must say. But it's super fun and I'm really excited to be working on season 2.
Yeah, so you are, helping cast.
Season 2.
Season 2.
Yep.
Which is fucking amazing.
Yep. Which I'm not going to go into any particulars about.
Yeah, you can't.
But I can safely say that I'm very excited to see what happens this season.
Yeah.
I think that Rachel Brosnahan is wonderful as an actress.
Yeah, she's good.
And she carries the fuck out of that show.
What's the name of her friend, the woman who is her lesbian friend?
Well, we haven't really addressed her sexuality, but
have we not?
No, but it's Alex Borstein.
Okay, Alex Borstein.
The character's name is Susie.
Susie. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. It's because she constantly there's a running joke that getting mistaken for a man because she dresses kind of butch. She's probably a lesbian. I don't know. It hasn't been addressed in the show. She doesn't really have a sexuality as far as we know.
She is my favorite.
She's great. I mean, Alex Borstein's a genius. And clearly Amy Sherman Palladino loves her because she was in Gilmore Girls.
Was she? I never watched Gilmore Girls. So.
You know I did. You know that I have very strong feelings about that show. Some of them not good. Some of them good.
Yeah.
But the feelings are strong, which I suppose is the mark of, and I did watch the entirety of the show, including Year in the Life. So clearly I was invested enough to continue and keep going.
Fair.
But yeah, no, Alex Borstein played, it was the most ridiculous caricature. She played the Emily Gilmore, who is the matriarch, the grandmother. She played her stylist, fashion designery sort of friend. So Alex Borstein in the early 2000s. Oh, by the way, Alex Borstein does the voice of Lois Smith in Family Guy.
Amazing.
She's I'm sorry. In Gilmore Girls, she played two roles. In the pilot and the second episode, she played a harp player at the hotel where Lorelai worked.
So nothing.
And then she was a really featured, prominent guest star in it. She was very personal.
But
she wasn't
a
regular.
Yeah.
But then the recurring thing, she was in this massive prosthetic makeup. Because Alex Borstein, you see how she looks now.
Yeah.
Imagine her in the early 2000s. That's almost 20 years ago. And they put her in old lady makeup and she was playing a character who talked about old Hollywood because she dressed people in a lot. Anyway.
Okay. Well, I like her now and I like her in Mrs. Maisel.
She's fabulous. She was also in the Lizzie McGuire movie.
I have not seen that in almost 20 years.
Yeah, but she was the teacher.
I don't know. I haven't seen that in almost 20 years. almost 20 years.
Fucking hysterical.
That's amazing.
I love her. Talk about funny women. That's what the whole show is about. Oh my God. Is funny women. Jesus. And Alex Borstein is a funny ass woman.
Yeah, Mrs. Maisel is.
Yeah, see, there she is. Lizzie McGuire movie. Look at that.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Look at fucking Hillary Duff.
Hillary.
Now she's in a show about publishing.
That's right, she is.
What? Yeah, I liked Mrs. Maisel. There were some things that I didn't like, but I liked Alex Borstein. I really, the character of Susie, I really loved.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, she was probably the main reason I kept watching after a while. I really didn't give a shit about Maisel.
Midge?
Mrs. Maisel. I didn't give a flying fuck about
Midge. It took me a while because I think the whole crux of it is that she's lived this whole life of privilege. She's from the Upper West Side, and yeah. She has rich Jewish parents. She is a Jewish American princess.
And all of a sudden, she's also good at comedy, and she's not hard at comedy, and like.
No, she does though.
She
That's
doesn't.
The thing. No,
she
no, no,
like
no,
because
she
like...
gets too far in her head. She's naturally very gifted at it. That's where her gift is from. But when she actually starts trying, she falls flat on her face.
There's one episode where she
no,
falls flat
on her
face.
No, there's a few episodes where she falls flat on her face.
Yes. I don't know. Hannah. I don't know about that.
Yes.
I think she falls flat on her face like one time and then she's like, I don't want to do this anymore. Oh my God. And then she like backs off and then she's doing it on her own in her own whatever parties and
but she needs the guidance of somebody who knows the business.
Yeah, she kind of like falls back into Susie's orbit, but it never is, like, natural enough for me to be like, okay, she tried. And this is partially as somebody who is a writer and somebody who has been trying to, you know, like, been sort of ingratiating myself into an industry for a long time. It really fucking grates me to see somebody portrayed that just... You know, they just, like, are super good at it. And then, like, oh, they have one time where they fail, and then they decide, I'm never going to do this again. And then they kind of do it, and then they, oh, okay, really, I'm going to do it. And then they're amazing again. And
well, we can agree to disagree on that front. I think she fails a lot more frequently and has to keep falling back on, because she spent her whole life thinking she was going to be a wife and a mother, and a wife and a mother, and now she, but then she realizes when she has to get a job, she enjoys work. Like, her parents judge the fuck out of her when she gets that job at a department store, and she loves it. She loves being a saleswoman.
Yeah, she's great at that, too.
She's, well, because she's very extroverted, she knows a lot about
makeup.
She's
great at everything.
She's not great at everything. That's the point. She's very great at certain things.
Yeah, she's great at everything.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Yeah, no, I don't love Mrs. Maisel. And part of it for me is that I think a lot of...
I enjoy it more than I enjoyed Gilmore Girls.
Yeah, I think that, like...
I think the characters are much more related.
And that I agree with.
You didn't watch Gilmore Girls.
The episodes that I watched made me not want to watch it again. I mean, and I watched all of Mrs. Maisel.
Yeah.
So, if you think about that, Mrs. Maisel got me to that point. But it was Susie that really got me through those episodes. More than Maisel. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I loved watching Susie. I loved that there was this character who had always been sort of in the business or adjacent to the business, who had been waiting for her shot, but she knew that her shot was not herself. You know, she was waiting for that other person who was gonna make it big for
her. I don't think she'd ever desired to.
No, but it was like this kind of thing that happened, and it was this thing
Midge,
that was like,
when
okay.
When she saw her, inspired her to...
Because Midge was great at everything. Fine.
Big
I'm just doing
roll.
That to make your fucking eyes
But
roll.
She saw her that one night, and that inspired her to develop her career. She never wanted to be a manager before. She just helped manage this club. And then she was like, you're so good that I want to hone this. I want to
be
your cheerleader.
Now you're being an asshole because you, like, everything has come so naturally to you, and every time you fail, you fucking back off and you fall out
but
of the picture.
But ain't that a fucking tale for millennials? Like, all these gifted millennials, myself included, that I expect to be good at something the first time I try it, and if I'm not, I get so disheartened because I've been told everything that I want is at my fingertips. That working hard at stuff, I mean, I work hard. I'm just saying, like, working hard at stuff I'm not naturally gifted at becomes challenging. It's not a millennial tale, but that's why I'm saying I relate to it.
Yeah, I think it's a different tale. I like Susie. I think that she is she's definitely the person that I appreciate the most, who keeps me coming back episode after episode. I'm not super interested in Midge. I kind of fast-forwarded through her scenes. I'm sorry.
But Rachel Brosnahan is so good.
She's great, but she just, her character is just not interesting to me.
Okay.
Well. I know. I'm sorry.
Do you know what minor character I found super fascinating, even though she was only in like...
And I think that is...
And about what it means to be a female comedian at that time. Because one of the things she runs into, a la Jane Lynch's character, who I found out was not a real comedian, I don't think, was inspired by. But it was like, women couldn't be pretty and funny at this time.
Right.
And if you were pretty, they were like, what? You're like, probably not actually funny.
Yeah,
you're like a singer or an actress.
Yeah.
You should be a singer or an actress.
Yeah.
Not a comedian. Comedians need to be ugly. But anyway, suffice it to say, I'm very excited to be a part of the season 2 team.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. Regardless of what I think about the show.
No, you like the show,
but
though.
I enjoy certain aspects of the show.
And the idea of it, and I binged it. Oh, in December, before I even had any notion that I would potentially be working on it.
Which is awesome.
I'm really excited to be working on it.
Thank you guys so much
for listening. We hope you learned something. We hope you're excited about learning something.
Yeah.
I seriously love every week that we talk about an awesome woman that I learn about and
I know
more about these people.
There are so many fucking amazing women.
If there's an amazing woman that you're super excited about in your life... Please email us, gwbbpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know. We want to talk about these, like, unspoken women in your life who are fucking brilliant.
Yes, ma'am.
Who need to be talked about. Find us on Twitter and Instagram, gwbbpodcast. We have our tip jar up and running on Pinecast. If you like what you're hearing and you want to maybe tip us a little bit, you know, tipping culture is important.
Yeah. Even just to help us, like, keep our hosting running, just to keep this podcast going, that would be really awesome.
We will put a link in the show notes, and if you want to donate 50 cents, if you want to donate $5, if you want to donate $1 million, I would love that. Ooh. I could pay off my student loan debt.
$1 million would be awesome.
$1 million would be great, but you know what would be best is like $1, because it would show that you support awesome ladies.
I disagree. I think $1 million is best.
I'm trying to be realistic, Hannah.
Okay, bye.
We're not going to get $1 million right now. That would be fucking great.
Yeah, that'd be great.
If you know any millionaires who are in the market to just donate to podcasters, direct them to our Pinecast tip jar, or just go there yourself. Give what you want. Whatever you think is feasible, whatever
you
think.
Keep us running.
We will love you forever.
We'll love you forever.
Thanks.
Thanks.
What else you gotta say, Han?
I think that's really it. I think you did the job.
Boom, boom, boom.
Boom, boom, boom.
Thanks again.
Thanks, guys.
We'll see you next week.
Peace out, witches.
XO.
XO. Ha ha ha!